Tech Cassette Library Special Lectures。 この講演は1956年 A.S. ホーンビー博士がエレックの招きで来日された折に行われたものであります。かなりのノイズが入っており、お聞き苦しい箇所のありますことをはじめにお断り申し上げておきます。
Now, Mr. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, after all the very kind and flattering remarks that Mr. Kuroda has made about me, I fear that your hopes will be raised too high. I am not going to give you a very learned lecture. I am going to talk to you in a very practical way.Because I know that you already are teachers, or that you are likely to become teachers of English in the future. Professor Kuroda said that I had been working very hard. Well, I have done some work, but I have also had the very great pleasure of returning to Japan after many years, and my pleasure in returning to Japan.Is so great that I don't feel at all tired. I feel that it is a combination of some work and a very real holiday. It is a very great pleasure to be back in Japan, and I am enjoying every minute of my stay here. Well, you have heard the subject that I have chosen for this afternoon. I want to talk about some aspects ofa direct oral method of teaching. Now, you know that there are all sorts of names that are used for methods. We hear about oral methods and reading methods, translation methods, natural methods. And these names don't mean very much unless we try to define clearlywhat we mean when we use such a name. There is a good deal of confusion about what these various names mean. Now, I want to talk about a direct oral method. And please notice that I said a direct oral method, indefinite article. Not the direct oral method,The indefinite article. Why do I use the indefinite article? Because there is no one method of any kind. Any method must depend upon the skill and the experience of the teacher who uses the method. And if I talk about a certain method to 20 teachers, those teachers will go to 20 different classrooms.And what they do will be a little different in every case. They will add their own experience, their own ideas. And that, of course, is quite right. We cannot dictate any method to our teachers. You, as teachers, must have your own freedom to adapt, to compromise, to use the benefit of your own experience. And that is why I say a direct oral method and not the direct oral method. Now, this term, direct oral method, is used for a method that aims at the formation of direct associations. Direct associations. And that word association is the most important aspect of the method. Associations.Association is the key to success in language learning and language teaching. We must form correct associations. Every word, every phrase, every collocation, every aspect of intonation, every bit of syntax has its own associations, or should have its own associations.If you have read the works of Professor Fries, you will often see the word signal. Are you familiar with that word in the works of Professor Fries? A signal is something that tells you something. For example, traffic signals, red and green, tell you when you will stop and when you can continue. Now, in language, we have certain signals. For example, in English, if you change the position of the subject and the finite verb like that, it is a signal, isn't it? I am I, this is this, we can we. The grammatical term is inversion of subject and finite verb. But really, it means nothing more than changing places. And that is a signal in English for a question. There are other signals, for example, who, when, where. Those are words that give a signal for a question. But this inversion of subject and finite, I am I, is one of the signals for the interrogative, for questions. And your pupils have to form an association, a strong association between that signal and the idea of a question. Let us take a tense, present perfect tense. He has gone. I have written. You have learnt. They have studied. He has been. What do you get there? You get a finite of the verb have. You get have or has, followed by a past participle. Have or has, and a past participle. What must you associate with that structure? Have or has, and a past participle. Not grammatical information, not necessarily the grammatical term present perfect tense. The right association is the idea of now, present time, present result. That is the association that you must form and the association that you, as teachers, must help your pupils to form. The association between have or has and a past participle and the present time or present result of past activity. For example, if I say, he has gone, well, you must associate that with the idea, now he is not here. He has gone, so now he is not here. There must be that association between have or has and a past participle and present time. He has gone. Now, tone has its meanings, its associations. If I use a falling tone, that has the association with finality. Finality, that's the end. And a rising tone has an association with incompletion, something not yet complete. For example, if I say, if it rains, what kind of tone is that? A rising tone. La la la, that's going up, rising tone. Well, if it rains, that is not a complete sentence, is it? And we associate that rising tone with the idea of incompletion, not yet complete. And the falling tone, I shan't go. La la la, the falling tone, that's final, complete. If it rains, I shan't go. So you see, in that little clause, that if clause, incomplete, I used a rising tone. And then, I shan't go, to complete the sentence, I used a falling tone. Well, that is an example of what I mean by associations in various aspects of language. With vocabulary, structure, tone, all sorts of things, we must form the right kind of association. Now, I'm going to use the word symbol for a word or a phrase or a collocation or a pattern or the way in which we use a tense or the way in which we use a tone or a tune in the voice. I use the word symbol for that, and I'm going to use the word referent for what is symbolized. I'll put those two words on the blackboard for you. There are the two words, the symbol and the referent. Now, if I say book, 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 that is a symbol in sound. Three sounds, two consonant sounds and a vowel in the middle, book. Or I can write it on the blackboard, B-double-O-K, that is four letters. Three sounds which you hear or four letters which you read, that is the symbol. The referent is the thing itself. The thing made of paper with print on it. That's the referent, the thing that is symbolized. When I use the word referent, I am borrowing the word from The Meaning of Meaning by Ogden and Richards. Now, some of you may have read that book. Not an easy book, but some of it is quite interesting. The symbol and the referent. Now, the referent may be an object. It might be table, for example, or microphone. Or it might be a relation in space. For example, it might be the idea of space between two objects or direction. Now, usually, the symbol for that kind of referent is an adverb or a preposition, up or down or in or out, and on, under. Or it might be a relation in time. For example, when I say yesterday or 2 days ago or tomorrow, those are symbols for relations in time. Or if I use a verb tense, went, that indicates time, doesn't it? Past time. So you have symbols of various kinds for various kinds of reference. Now, what does the language learner need to do? He needs to form a close association, a strong association between the symbol and the referent. And that is what we mean by using the term direct. The association between the symbol and the referent must be direct. If you say book, and then you use the Japanese word home, and then you have the object, well, that association is not direct because the Japanese word comes in the middle. So we want our pupils to form a direct association. When they see this object, we want them to think at once book, not first thinking of home and then book, but getting the direct association. We want a direct association between the symbol and the referent. Well, the formation of this direct association is only the second step. It is only the second step in the language learning process. What is the first step? The first step is learning what the new symbol stands for. Learning what Dr. Palmer used to call to identify the new symbol. And we can identify a new symbol in several ways. That is only the first step, however. One of the numerous statements made by those who oppose the direct method is the statement that the mother tongue is not used in the classroom. They say that direct method forbids the use of the mother tongue. That is not true. It is quite wrong. If I use the direct method, I will use the mother tongue of my pupils if I know it. Well, when you teach English here, you can certainly use Japanese if you find it useful. And you are still using the direct method. Now, why is that? Well, the first step is identification. And you cannot always help your pupils to identify a new word or a new symbol simply by showing. Sometimes you can demonstrate quite easily. You can say, this is a desk, this is a desk, this is a desk. Or that is a window, that is a window. Now, what happens when you do that? Your pupils identify the new symbol, desk or table or window or whatever it is, because you show them, you point or touch, or perhaps you use a picture on the blackboard or some other method. Then they identify at once without the mother tongue. And in that case, you have identification, the first step, and you have the beginning of direct association. At first, perhaps, your pupils will think of the new word. If you point and say, that's the window, then perhaps you will hear the children in your class muttering the Japanese word for window. That often happens, doesn't it? Well, you must continue until the Japanese word no longer comes up to the surface. It is in the mind of your pupils, and it rises. If you continue, give them practice, then they will associate that object made of glass and wood and the sounds window. They will have that direct association. But you can't always do that. You can't always show or demonstrate. There are hundreds of words and phrases that you can demonstrate quite easily. Activities, for example, I'm touching things, looking at things, walking, coming back, going, and so on. But after a while, you come to some words that you cannot demonstrate. And in that case, well, what do? You give the Japanese at once. You tell your pupils the equivalents of these new words. They identify through the mother tongue. But it is still the direct method, because afterwards you must help them to form the direct association. So when I say an oral direct method, those are the explanations. It is oral because you use a lot of talking and you make your pupils talk. You do that because oral work is fast, or should be fast. And it is direct because your aim, your purpose, is to form a direct association between the symbol, the new word or phrase or tune or tense, and what it stands for. The symbol and the referent must be directly associated. That is why we call it direct oral. But if it is economical of time and effort, there is no reason whatever why you should not take the first step through the mother tongue. But you are still using a direct method because your aim, your final aim, is the formation of a direct association, a very close association between the symbol and the referent. Now let me give an example of words that are not suitable, perhaps, for teaching by demonstration. Adverbs. Now, an adverb like slowly, you can demonstrate. I am walking to the window, I am walking very slowly. But when you come to a word like already, or yet, or still, well, it is possible to teach those words without using the mother tongue. But it would take a very long time. And I think it would be better for you to give Japanese equivalents. And then, the important second step, that is the formation of the direct association. That is the most important part. How do you do that? Well, at any time during the year, or during 2 or 3 years of the lower secondary school course, or junior high, if you are thinking in American and not British English, if you are thinking in English, in British English, you say that's lower secondary. At any time during those 3 years, you use those words whenever you have an opportunity. You say, for example, oh, what's the date today? It's the 15th of May, isn't it? It isn't really warm yet. The weather isn't hot yet. It's still not summer weather. But already the winter is past. Well, there you are using the words in a natural context. Or sometimes you look at your watch and say, what time is it? Oh, it's 10 to 11. We have already had 45 minutes. The lesson is not over yet. We still have 5 minutes, or whatever it may be. I don't know what time your lessons start and finish, so I cannot be exact. But that is the kind of thing you can do. It doesn't take more than half a minute to say those things. Occasionally, perhaps 2 or 3 times a week, during the whole year. And in that way, your pupils form the right kind of association between those three words and what they stand for, their meanings, still, yet, and already. That is what I mean by the formation of direct associations for such words which are called structural words in English. You don't do that for every word in English. Many, many words in English, there's no need for that kind of procedure at all. But when you come to important words, you must pay attention to the formation of this direct association. If you teach a word like triangle, well, once the pupils have identified the word, they know that it means a figure, a geometrical figure with three sides and three angles. That's enough. There's no more to teach. But when you teach important structural words such as and so, often, yet, already, still, there are many, many things to teach in addition to the Japanese equivalents. Your pupils have to learn how to use those words in sentences, where to put them so that the word order is correct and so on. Let me take an example of tenses. Most English grammar books give a future tense, don't they? Yes, they call it the simple future tense. I shall go, we shall go, he will go, you will go, they will go, with will and shall. And then you also know that we often use going to for future time. What are you going to do tomorrow? Where are you going this evening? What are you going to do when you leave school? Going to. Now, what is the difference between them? It is your business to help your pupils to associate going to and an infinitive. I am going to be an aeroplane pilot when I grow up. I'm going to be an aeroplane pilot when I grow up. Or I'm going to be an engine driver, or whatever it is. That is a future of intention, isn't it? It really means I intend to be an aeroplane pilot. You can't say tomorrow is going to be Friday. What do you say? You say tomorrow will be Friday. Is that right? Is it Friday tomorrow or Thursday? I forget. But you see what I mean. You can't say, I am 20 years old now, next year I am going to be 21, because you cannot control your age, unfortunately, by an exercise of willpower. So you say, next year I shall be 21. Well, now you have to help your pupils to associate going to and infinitive with the idea of intention. I'm going to write my name on the blackboard. I'm going to draw a cat and so on. Intention. And they have to associate shall and will with a pure future in which there is no element of will. Tomorrow will be Friday. And next year I shall be 32. But I am going to visit the zoo on Sunday. Intention. Well, that is your business, you see, to give your pupils the right kind of association. And you do that through oral work. You tell your pupils to do things. You say, now, what are you going to do? You call a pupil to the blackboard and say, now, I want you to draw a dog on the platform. What are you going to do? I'm going to draw a dog. What is he going to do? He's going to draw a dog. Now, rub out the cat's tail. What are you going to do? What is he going to do? That is the kind of way in which you can give the direct association, by asking and answering questions after you have given sufficient examples yourself. And similarly, with the present perfect tense. Again, form associations through this question and answer work. Very often people say that the present perfect tense in English is very difficult. They say, I think we should postpone this tense until the second year or perhaps third year of the English course. But it is not necessary to do that. The present perfect tense is probably commoner in spoken English than the past tense. If I meet a friend, I don't say, what did you do? Yesterday I say, what have you been doing recently? Where have you been? not where did you go, what did you do? I say, well, where have you been? What have you done recently? I say, have you been to the cinema recently? Not did you go to the cinema recently? The present perfect tense is, I am quite certain, much commoner in spoken English than the past tense. And it is an important tense to teach at an early stage. Now you can do that. You can help your pupils to form the right kind of association very easily. You start with going to. I'm going to draw a house on the blackboard. And now I am drawing the roof and so on. Now I have finished the drawing. I am going to rub it out. I have rubbed it out. I have cleaned the blackboard. And they get the association between that tense and the idea of now. I have written my name on the blackboard. I have written my name on the blackboard. And what does it mean? It means now it is there. Look, now it is there. I have rubbed it out. And what does that mean? Now it is not there. You get that association between that tense and the idea of now. If I say, for example, I have had a good lunch today. I've had a good lunch. What does it mean? It means now I'm not hungry. It means now I am not hungry. I have had a good lunch. If I said, I had a good lunch, past tense, that association must be quite different. I had a good lunch. That suggests some time ago, now I am hungry again. When is dinner ready? So you see, I have had a good lunch suggests the present result of recent activity. I was recently busily eating my lunch, recent activity. Now I'm not hungry. I have had a good lunch. Well, that is the kind of help you can give your pupils to form the correct association between tenses and what these tenses signify, between the symbol and the referent. once again, let me repeat what I said a few minutes ago. This method is called direct because it aims at the formation of these direct associations. And it is called oral because oral work, this rapid exchange of question and answer, is the most effective means during the first year or two of achieving this aim. I notice that I said during the first year or two. It is not work that you will continue during the whole of the 6 years of the middle school and high school course. It is the work that you do during the first year or two that is important. That is when the foundation is laid and when the right kind of associations must be formed. If you do this work successfully in the first year or 2 years, then you can afterwards go on to other kinds of work with much greater confidence and with much greater likelihood of success. I know quite well that if you ask me questions, you will say, what about entrance examinations? I have heard that question very often in Japan. Well, one answer, there is not a complete answer. I know that there is no complete answer, but one answer is this. If you do the right kind of work in the first 2 years, your pupils will make better progress in the second, third, fourth, and fifth years. And they will be better prepared in the end for these wretched examinations.
ここで A 面は終わりです。引き続き B 面をお聞きください。